The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
And this is the Pat Kenny Show with Anton in for Pat. As we all head back to work, college and school and our normal routine in the next few weeks after the summer break, the outlook and possible transmission of infectious diseases like COVID and monkeypox is unfortunately not very far from our minds. To get a better insight into all this, I'm delighted to be joined now by Senior Emergencies Officer with the World Health Organization, Catherine Smallwood. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning. Nice to speak to you.
And you, it's interesting to look at people's behaviour in respect of public health now, because there was a general consensus, there was a commonality among most people. So you'd see everybody either wearing masks or everybody hand sanitising. It has become very sporadic and very different across the various different people's responses. Some are wearing masks, some are sanitising, some are avoiding public transport, others are going on like nothing is at risk at all. Who's right?
Well, it's all come down to personal decisions and a personal assessment of an individual's risk and choices that they make. And certainly with the government requirements having changed, this has now moved to an individual decision. And I think it's not a matter of who's right or wrong. It's a matter of people making decisions in order to protect themselves. Certainly masks continue to work. They haven't stopped working. And the virus continues to circulate. So in terms of the public health rationale, there is still a good rationale for the use of masks, for the good ventilation of closed spaces where there's people coming together. And as we move into the autumn and people will be mixing indoors much more often, these are things that people should continue to consider in terms of their daily choices.
Can you walk us through the risk profile of the virus now, given that it seems to have attenuated down from some of its more extreme versions, that there is a level of immunity within the community, and the presence of vaccine across the community has greatly changed the picture as we head into winter?
That's right. So the population immunity, both thanks to really extensive vaccination coverage in many parts of Europe and including in Ireland, and also the fact that many people have also had COVID-19, means that we have relatively good population immunity, but that ebbs and flows. And with new variants that emerge on a regular basis, so this virus is continuing to evolve and escape our immunity, we will have infections go up and down. And that's in the absence of any measures that we put in place to control that transmission. That has meant that overall, the public health impact of the disease has declined. I wouldn't say that's a feature of the virus per se, but it is really a feature of our own immunity against the virus. However, it continues to be a severe disease, and it does continue to contribute to too many deaths in our region and also in Ireland. And every week, people are continuing to die from COVID-19, and that's even when transmission rates are relatively low. So, yes, it's not as bad as it was. However, it's really about us deciding what is acceptable in terms of the number of people who go on to die. And the people who are going to be dying from this disease are the people who we've been talking about in over the past 3 years, those who are older, those who have other comorbidities or other diseases, health conditions that put them at more risk, or people that are more exposed to the virus on a regular basis. And we also have to think about, of course, the shadow pandemic, which is long COVID, the millions of people who have been affected by these kind of long-term sequela and consequences of the initial infection.
Can I ask you about that acceptability line in terms of the public health impact of the disease? Because if we cast our mind back to when this all started, the phrase that got used in Ireland and around a lot of the rest of the world was flatten the curve. In other words, the assumption is that a certain amount of people are going to get this disease, and that the objective is that you reduce the pace at which they get it so that the health system isn't overwhelmed. Over time, then, that morphed into being about a broader general health protection and death reduction, and in some cases, in some countries, zero COVID. What in the WHO's experience of the last 18 months is now a realistic objective in policy terms?
Well, a realistic objective is really to minimize the number of people getting getting COVID-19 and going on to be hospitalized or dying from it. We don't think that zero COVID is particularly achievable in the European context. Other countries have gone for that, but in a very highly connected continent and region such as Europe, that would be very, very difficult. So minimizing transmission is the key, and also protecting those who are particularly vulnerable. So all of those things flatten the curve. Those were very much are still very much relevant, because an overwhelmed health system is one that needs to take a cut in terms of the quality of care. If you've got one healthcare worker who's dealing with five times as many patients as they normally would be able to manage, they're not going to give each of those patients the care that they would otherwise be able to give. And that's why keeping transmission at manageable levels is really important. And as we go into the autumn and the winter, we're going to have COVID. We may also have influenza and flu circulating at the same time. So there is a potential that hospitals and the health systems will be again put under strain. So we really need to think about this as a social compact. Maybe individually we're taking certain steps towards protecting ourselves, but we also have to think about the population level at the wider level and how we as a community, as a society, are able to really reduce the risks of COVID, but also at this stage in the pandemic, not think about lockdowns, but think about how we best manage the disease in a context of being able to go and run about our day-to-day lives.
Can you speak a little bit about the impact and reliance on vaccines? What's your expectation in relation to the efficacy of the next generation of vaccines and the breadth of mutations that they will be able to deal with?
Well, it's a little bit like a game of cat and mouse. So as the virus evolves, so must our vaccine composition. And the space between those two things needs to be as short as possible to ensure that the vaccines or the new generations of vaccines that are coming online are as closely matched to the circulating viruses as possible, in a genetic way of speaking. So it must be made clear that the vaccinations are, or the vaccines that we have, the original vaccines, continue to do what they were designed to do, which is prevent hospitalizations and severe disease and avert deaths. And there's going to be a set of studies that will come out in the next few days that update some of the estimates of number of deaths averted through the vaccination campaigns. But also at the same time, we need to look at the next generations of vaccines, and those might be vaccines that include other variants. So other variants of Omicron, for example, those are coming up. But also in the longer term, looking at vaccines that won't necessarily have the same specificity towards specific variants, but might look at coronaviruses writ large. But that's a long way off still at the moment.
And hand in hand with COVID and the winter wave that we're undoubtedly likely to experience of COVID, there's all of the coverage of monkeypox and its spread around the world. Now, there will be some who will read that coverage and think this is media casting around to find the next big thing in terms of virology that everybody can get worried about. Would they be right?
No, they wouldn't. This is very much a real problem. And the justification and illustration of that was in its declaration as a public health emergency of international concern. So monkeypox is very, very different to COVID, poses very, very different threats to public health, and yet is an emerging disease, which has been present in the African region for a long time now, several decades, but has suddenly and quite rapidly taken on a new way of transmitting across the world, and is posing a very real risk of a new orthopox virus. Of course, we know well about smallpox, which is in the same family and was eradicated. But what we're now seeing is this new orthopox virus, monkeypox, potentially taking hold across several regions of the world. And since May, many countries in the European region have been responding to that. And there's a very specific population at risk, and that's men who have sex with men at the moment. it's a disease that's spreading mostly through sexual contact and close physical contact between people and one of whom will be infected with the disease. It's not a disease that spreads as readily as COVID-19 does, but in the context of a new emerging disease that is taking hold and trying to find its place and trying to establish its place in its in the human population, we need to respond to that, and we need to respond aggressively so that we can stop it in its tracks, put the cat back in the bag, and then try to eliminate the disease from the European region where it doesn't belong.
When you from the WHO look across the responses that different countries have to pandemics, has the capacity to deal with emerging diseases been greatly improved by COVID?
Yes, I think so. And then the real challenge will be sustaining those improvements. As awful as the COVID pandemic has been, it has opened the door to innovation in our way of in our manner of responding to disease outbreaks, especially in the Western European context, let's say, where responding to diseases of these kinds was a little bit thought of as a sort of historical problem. And we need to remind ourselves that there will be further pandemics in the future. And we need to keep these capabilities alive and well. And so right now, our focus is really in making use of these innovations that we've seen over the past 3 years and bringing them, integrating them back into the normal health system so that the lessons that we've learned are really learned, the capacities that we've developed are maintained. And so next time we'll be much better equipped and much better prepared.
Finally, Catherine, can I ask you about the increase in cases of hepatitis, particularly the cases among children?
Yes. So we've been very concerned about reports over the summer of increasing acute severe hepatitis reported from several countries around the European region, but also beyond the European region. We've been looking at the reasons for that and whether there's any linkages to various different viruses that are circulating. The good news here is that cases are really leveling off in the region, and we're beginning to see a drop in the number of new cases reported. So this is an outbreak that we're responding to, and now we're really looking into better understanding what caused this outbreak in the first place, and the linkages to different adenoviruses and viruses circulating in the population of children across the region, and looking at other cofactors that might have explained that. And we hope to find some answers to those questions in due course.
Dr. Catherine Smallwood, Senior Emergencies Officer with the World Health Organization, thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.